The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia Sportage. When you drive your new Kia Sportage, prepare to be noticed. The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia Sportage. Peace of mind is standard. Quality guaranteed. Kia. Home of the 7-year warranty.
And of course, the Irish Eurovision entry is Casey and Canlin. Am I right? Yes, and good luck to them. And plenty of you in touch already about your most favourite sports commentary. The Marty Morrissey won the day of the, I think, the draw in All-Ireland last year, Cork versus Clare. That's been suggested. Any commentary by Michael Corcoran, Derek in Dublin, looking for that. We will try and sort you, Derek, by the end of the show. And other requests coming in. But I'm delighted now to be joined by a man who is, I suppose, he's a Limerick man originally, but he's making his way in commentary for both BBC radio and television. Conor McNamara, good morning.
Good morning, John.
And how are things with you, Conor?
Very good, thanks, very good. Start of a busy week now. I've got a Premier League game tomorrow at 3 o'clock down in Cardiff. I'll do Match of the Day 2 on Sunday. And then on Tuesday, I'm going to Munich for the Bayern Munich Manchester United game, which, I'll be honest with you, when I found out I was doing the game about 2 weeks ago, I thought, ooh, this could be tough because it could be 4-0 to Bayern Munich from the first leg. I think a lot of people are expecting that. But now suddenly it's still very close and it's still game on. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, there was the belief that it would be a dead rubber, as they call it. But still loads to play for. By the way, do you have a team that you follow? Or are you allowed to follow a team as a commentator?
Well, no, the funny thing is, and this is the truth, and I'm sure many people always ask me about this all the time, and they think, oh, you know, you're going to have an allegiance towards a team and you can't be trusted if you're commentating on that team. I mean, genuinely, growing up as a kid, the only sort of posters on my wall would have been of Munster rugby players. You know, and we used to go to Rathbone and watch Limerick play football and stuff like that. And then, obviously, you know, you'd watch Leeds and Liverpool and Man United. And I guess, you know, back when I was growing up in the 80s, they were the only clubs you would see. You know, so you might see one game a week on the TV and it was nearly always Liverpool or Leeds or Man United, maybe Arsenal as well. But I really don't have an allegiance to any of those. And I even find now when I watch Republic of Ireland games, and if I'm not working, and all my friends be like, oh, that's definitely a penalty for Ireland. And I'm always too neutral. I'm just so used to working and not, you know, being impassioned about it that I go, nah, even though it could be an Ireland penalty, you know what, it's not. You know, he dived or it's not a penalty. So you end up sort of, despite yourself, being a little bit like a referee and just sort of evaluating the game a little bit more professionally. I think that's probably the one. I mean, it's a great job and I love doing it, but that's probably the one thing you miss out on, is that impassioned sort of blind faith in your team and that your team is always right. Unfortunately, I think I've lost that as a fan now.
Yes. And Conor, was it always going to be sports commentary for you from an early age?
I think so, yeah. I used to work in sort of local radio in Limerick when I was a teenager, and, you know, it was a bit of sport and a bit of music and sort of, you know, almost the DJ category of radio. But that sort of got me into it. My dad used to work for RTE years ago.
Yes,
Michael McNamara, Mickey Mac,
yes, yeah. Everyone will know.
So in our house growing up, you know, radio was the medium that, you know, we listened to more radio than we watched TV or anything else. So that was what we were always into. And yeah, look, as a teenager, I would have dreamed of becoming a football commentator. It's not the easiest thing to get into, and a lot of it is the right place at the right time. So I don't think you can plan a career about it. You got to sort of cross your fingers and hope that it works out for you, and thankfully things have been pretty good so far.
They have indeed. And I think I read somewhere that at a certain stage in your young life you decided that you weren't going to be playing for Ireland in rugby or in soccer, and that the next best thing was doing commentary.
Yeah, I forget about Ireland. I think I realised I wasn't even going to play for the school team in rugby. We'd a very good school team. David Wallace recently retired for Ireland. He was in my class in school growing up, and I would have been very much on the subs bench. So once I realised I wasn't going to be good enough to play or physically strong enough to play, I still wanted to go to the games. So this has worked out being the next best thing.
A little bit like Ruby Walsh. Ruby was telling us yesterday morning that he used to play for Naas, and that while he was a scrum half, and that while he harboured ambitions to play for the Irish rugby team, he realised after a while his size might militate against him doing so. Now, as I said, we are featuring lots of different famous sports commentaries this morning, and Conor, you have kindly chosen two, and the first, your first choice is a very poignant bit of commentary. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, people, you know, what I always find difficult is when you ask the public or the audience, you know, what's your favourite commentary, more often than not, they'll come back with something that, ironically, is actually not a technically brilliant commentary sometimes. And what I mean by that is it's often one where the commentator kind of loses it, starts screaming, starts roaring. People go, that's great. Look at the passion he's got. Technically, from the sort of commentator's union point of view, that's not brilliant commentary because people can't understand what you're saying. And it's fair enough. OK, you know, if Ireland win the Six Nations or win a World Cup or something, yeah, you know, that's you know, you can turn it up to 11 then, and that's as big as it's going to get. But in your average run of commentary, you don't want to peak too soon. You know, if someone scores a brilliant goal in the first half and you absolutely go for it, what if they score a slightly better one in the second half? Then where do you go? You know, so you've got to try and keep things in control. And I think this example, which is Peter Jones, who used to be the football correspondent for BBC Radio, was at Hillsborough, famous day, and this is topical now with the Hillsborough inquiry starting up again this week. But it would have been very easy for him to get too emotional, to maybe be upset, to maybe, you know, be angry, the kind of emotions that people would go through in that day, you know, how have these people died, how terrible it is. But he manages to keep so much in control, but yet conveying the emotion of what's happening without losing the emotional control himself, if you know what I mean. So if you ever listen to this, and just it's almost like poetry, this, and this is him on the radio speaking, you know, live on air on Sports Report on the Saturday when people would have been tuning in knowing that this terrible thing has happened, and he describes the atmosphere.
Well, I think the biggest irony is that the sun is shining now and Hillsborough's quiet, and over there to the left the green Yorkshire hills, and who would have known that people would die here in the stadium this afternoon. I don't necessarily want to reflect on Heysel, but I was there that night broadcasting with Emlyn Hughes, and he was sitting behind me this afternoon. And after half an hour of watching stretchers going out and oxygen cylinders being brought in and ambulance sirens screaming, he touched me on the shoulder and he said, "I can't take any more." And Emlyn Hughes left. The gymnasium here at Hillsborough is being used as a mortuary for the dead. And at this moment, stewards have got little paper bags and they're gathering up the personal belongings of the spectators. And there are red and white scarves of Liverpool and red and white bobble hats of Liverpool and red and white rosettes of Liverpool, and nothing else. And the sun shines now.
Yes, indeed. The great BBC commentator Peter Jones there on the Hillsborough disaster, and one of our texters saying, describing it, I think, as you described it as well, Connor, as tragically poetic and yet beautiful. I'm intrigued by what you say, though, about the sort of commentary, the sports commentary union, what is so. When you're listening other commentary, can you actually listen to it without saying, "Oh, that was a stupid thing to say. Oh, I wouldn't have done it that way."
Well, you do. I mean, I think there's a sort of technical mechanics, and it's like anything. It's like playing an instrument, and you know, I'm not going to, you know, come across all arty farty here now and say, "Oh, you know, it's an art form commentary." Of course not, and it's whatever works for you and whatever works for the listener. But there's certain things, like, you know, for example, on radio, I think you can't give the score often enough. What infuriates me, you get in the car and there's a match on, and you tune in, and the commentator doesn't give the score for 10 minutes. And you're like, well, this is all well and good that exciting stuff is happening, but what's the score? And, you know, as a commentator, you can't assume that your listeners have been gripped the whole way through, you know, particularly on radio. I mean, obviously on TV, they've got a graphic that says the scoreline, but stuff like that. And you know, there's a geography in the pitch. You've got to say where the ball is. It's all well and good that, you know, player A passes to player B, but are they doing it in their own half? Are they doing it on the left-hand side, the right-hand side? Is this a threatening position or not? So there's certain mechanics that, you know, you listen to others and you'll think, well, hang on a minute, you've got to help me out here a bit more. But as I say, you know, to the man in the street listening in, they remember the big moments, and more often it's not. It's when the commentator probably loses it and starts screaming.
And what is the difference then between radio commentating and TV commentating?
Well, on radio, I mean, not just in sport but everything else, you're painting the picture. You're describing all the details so the listener feels like they're actually there. On TV, I think you annoy people if you describe what they can already see. Someone said to me years ago, TV commentary is adding light and shade. You're not sort of colouring in the full picture. You're just doing a little bit of a shade. So it adds to the viewing pleasure. The trap that some people fall into and annoys viewers or listeners is TV commentators point out the obvious. And you're like, well, yeah, I can see that. Tell me something I can't see. And, you know, when you're sitting at home, and obviously nowadays, and there'll be multiple cameras, and you could have 20, 30 cameras around a stadium, they're picking up every angle. But there's still little bits that you can't see in that tunnel vision of looking down your television. And that's what the commentator should be able to add for you, and that extra shade. In terms of radio, I mean, what I love is the descriptive things, and you describe the ferocity of a tackle, and was it a hard tackle, or was it a tigerish tackle, or was it a ferocious tackle? And it's the different words that you get to use. And that's why, John, and this is interesting, commentators in general, I guess in sport in general, get accused of being guilty of a lot of cliches. And the reason you come out with a cliche in sport is because it's a big sort of complicated idea, but you want to say it in a very brief sentence. So, for example, you know, the expression people use a lot is something like, he's turned on a sixpence. I say, why do you use that? That's a really old-fashioned phrase. Why would you say he's turned on a sixpence? But if I'm doing a game at Old Trafford, you could say, like, okay, you could say it like this. You could say, Wayne Rooney has got his back to goal, he's received on his chest, he's now swivelled around 180 degrees, and now he shoots. The trouble is, by the time you've said that, he's already shot, and it's either a goal or it's gone wide, and you're still describing how he turned. So there's these few little buzzwords that you just, you know, he's turned on a sixpence, everyone knows exactly what you mean. You know, he's swivelled around. And that's why the cliches get used so often, because it's almost like they're a shorthand.
That's a defence of cliches that you have.
Exactly,
to
yeah. I'm a big defender of cliches. Or as I like to call them, idioms. What are your favourite? They sound a lot more polite.
Apart from turning on a sixpence, what are your own favourites?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, there are the really lame ones, you know, the sort of game of two halves and that sort of stuff, which people use. I think, you know, and to be fair, actually, it's probably more the players who fall into the lazy ones when they're interviewed after the game, you know, oh, we're only thinking of the next match and stuff like that, which is just, it's almost the sentence that they drill out while they're thinking of the next thing to say. It's a sort of default position for them.
Hmm. And we're just going to get to your second choice now, Connor, of a bit of commentary. And what have you chosen?
Yeah, well, and this goes back again to what I say about, you know, when you've got to keep the control. It's a really exciting moment, but you've got to keep your wits about you. And again, it also comes back to, you know, people say, oh, you know, what team do you support? And the only reason you get excited in that commentary is because you support that team or whatever. But this is an example of a Scotsman commentating on England winning a very, very important game of rugby when they won the World Cup in 2003. And it's Ian Robertson, who's still the BBC Radio rugby commentator. What he does brilliantly here is, A, he's Scottish, but he still conveys all the emotion. You know, you couldn't be happier in terms of, you know, he is saying he is totally conveying the importance of this moment. But he doesn't lose his cool with it. And what he does is he cleverly makes a calculated decision, which was a risk. Because he does, as soon as the ball goes through the post, the Johnny Wilkinson famous drop goal, he calls it. He said, he looks at his watch and he works out there is not enough time for Australia to come back. And he announces there and then that England have won the Rugby World Cup. Now, we all know, you know, as Ireland rugby fans, you remember the famous Grand Slam, O'Gara's late, late drop goal. You know, you can come down the other end and score very, very quickly. But he knew all his years in rugby, there wasn't enough time. And he called it there and then. And that, to me, is brave. And just when you hear the passion in his voice, this, to me, is commentary. You know, we've got an expression, he nailed it. You listen to this commentary, he nails this big moment.
There's 35 seconds to go. This is the one. It's coming back for Johnny Wilkinson. He drops for World Cup glory.
Yes!
It's up. It's over. He's done it. Johnny Wilkinson is England's hero yet again. And there's no time for Australia to come back. England have just won the World Cup.
Who was his co-commentator shouting in the background?
This proves my point. His co-commentator was Rob Andrew, the former out half. Now, the trouble is, if Rob Andrew was the commentator there, everyone would probably know that it's good news for England, but you wouldn't know what has happened because he's just screaming.
Yes.
Whereas Ian Robertson is conveying all the emotion. You feel like you're in the ground. The goosebumps come up the back of your neck. However, you can still hear every word he's saying. And at the end of the day, particularly with radio commentary, that's the bottom line. You've got to know what's happened.
Yeah, and you talk about reaching the pitch, the correct pitch, and that if there's goal scored in the first half, you can't give it all because there might be a second goal scored.
Yeah.
And you can't, in other words, you can't repeat it or you can't reach a crescendo. Michael Corcoran now, there are plenty of requests coming in for Michael. And
who's brilliant, by the way.
Yeah, I think one of his great talents is capturing the moment. So we're going to hear a bit of this. There's plenty of it on YouTube. It's all over the place. But this particular one was dates back to 2011, and it's Munster versus Northampton. And it's a commentary by Michael on Ronan's drop kick.
Back towards O'Gara, the attempted drop goal outside the 22, towards the post. O'Gara, what a drop and goal! It's gone between the posts. Ronan O'Gara between the posts after about 145 paces. O'Gara between the posts. The referee has blown the full-time whistle. Northampton have been absolutely kicked where it's hurt most. Munster at the dead, 100 caps for eight. Munster with the victory. Northampton are devastated. They might have been brilliant for 8.5 matches. They were fantastic for 79 minutes and 50 odd seconds, maybe 85 seconds. Munster after 100,000 phases. O'Gara with a drop of goal. They've beaten Northampton by 2 points. Incredible.
You never know. You never know he was from Cork, would you?
It's fantastic. But, you know, you can hear every word. That's the point. You know, that's passion and that's brilliant. You can hear it in his voice. And his voice is at the verge of cracking there. It's clearly that's at the end of a game and he's been powering away for the last 80 minutes. But you can still make out every word. And I think, you know, when I referred to the commentators union thing before, before. It's when people just start screeching and you can't actually make out the syllables, that's where you're in trouble.
And Conor, who are your own all-time commentating heroes?
Well, look, definitely Micheál Mira-Hurtig could be up there. And I remember when I first started out as a commentator, I was still living in Dublin, and I met him at a dinner one time, and I was sitting beside him, and it was just fantastic. Because for me, like, what an idol, and to get to spend time with him like that. And I always remember he said to me one thing. He said, you know, people think that, you know, you've got to be really talented to become a commentator. He said, it's not. He said, it's 90% work and it's 10% talent. And he said, if you don't put the homework in, if you don't know your stuff, then people won't take you seriously. Then they don't believe. And the bottom, you know, the first and foremost, forget about how loud you're screeching, how good your voice is, what you know, if you don't know your stuff, that is the bottom line criteria to be a commentator. So he'd have been right up there. Also, I guess growing up, Peter O'Sullivan, the racing commentator, I always thought he just had this gravitas about him that, you know, he sort of felt like you were sitting into this luxury motor car with leather seats and you're just sort of, you know, squeezing yourself in, and you just felt so comfortable listening to his voice. So Peter O'Sullivan and Micheál Mira-Hurtig probably would have been the favourites.
And what's your own, when it comes to commentary, what would you regard as your own sporting highlight, the day you reckon you nailed it yourself?
Yeah, it's a really funny one. You know, I mean, what always seems to come to mind is the big games. You know, I've been fortunate to commentate on FA Cup finals and Champions League finals, but often just sort of, you know, from my own point of view, the satisfaction you take is things that maybe could have gone wrong, but you got away with it. And I remember doing a game in Portugal in Euro 2004, and it was Italy against Bulgaria. There was two things that happened in the game. One was that a penalty was awarded to Bulgaria, and I couldn't see the number on the back of the player. And whatever angle the cameras were at, I was seeing his side, I was seeing his front, but I couldn't see his number on the back. And, you know, you have a fair idea what the players look like. But what it came down to was that before the match, I'd gone down to the side of the pitch, and I'd actually written down the colour boots that all the players were wearing. And by looking down to the thing, I saw there's only one, I could see he was going to take it left footed. There was only one player left footed who was wearing green boots. And I was able to get the identification right. So I just, in myself, I just felt very much relieved that I'd managed to get away with that. And then the other thing, in that same game, it was when Trapattoni was manager of Italy. And they scored a late goal of the game, and they thought they were going through. But it was one which football fans might remember. The other game in the group was between, I think, was it Denmark and Sweden? And if there was only one scoreline, if it finished 2-2, both Denmark and Sweden would go through and Italy were out. But any other scoreline, 2-1, 3-3, 0-0, you know, Italy would have been through. So Italy scored this late goal and they're all celebrating. But I know in my ear from our reporter at the other game that it is 2-2. It's finished 2-2 in the other game. So I'm commentating while the Italians are celebrating. And I'm saying down on the pitch, they are celebrating, but they're wrong. You know, they think they're going through, but they're not. Now, in the back of my head, there's a small boy going, hang on, Conor McNamara, have you got this right? You know, these Italians, this is their job. They are jumping around the pitch celebrating. They're up on each other's shoulders. Yeah. And why are you saying the opposite? So you've got to have that courage, the conviction in yourself that the information you have is right, that you've thought the permutations through. And on the days when those things go well, I think that's when you go off and you have a beer afterwards and you say, well, you've done a good job.
Well, continued success in your role as commentator. Thank with you, BBC on radio and television. Conor McNamara, and we'll catch up soon. Talk to
good
you.
To talk to you. Thanks.
Text 51551. The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1.
And keep your commentary, sports commentary suggestions coming to 51551. Anne says she would love to hear Sean Bon Brannock on the occasion of Katie Taylor winning gold at the London Olympics. Here it is, Anne.
August Hokkeun. 10 points tonight. Katie Taylor! Katie Taylor, champion of the champion of the champion Olympics in Joe. Tasha Groot and Katie Taylor, a lady of a husband, as an east and sea of a bountishin, as she hain, Agus Dadja, Agus Billy, Agus Far, Georgia, Tasha the Pine, Paraguay, Hokkien.
There you are, Sean Bon Brannock, on the occasion of Katie Taylor's win at the Olympics. Now, we're going to continue with our commentary, our famous commentaries, and there's been a suggestion that we play a commentary from a test match in cricket between England and the West Indies back in 1991. The two commentators are Jonathan Agnew and Brian Johnston, and, well, let's say it all ends, you know, with a few chuckles.
He knew exactly what was going to happen. He tried to step over the stumps and just flicked a bail with his right hand.
He honestly tried to do the splits over it, and unfortunately the inner part of his thigh must have just removed the bail.
He just didn't quite get his leg over.
Anyhow, he did very well indeed, batting 131 minutes and hit three fours. And then we had Lewis playing extremely well for his 47 not out. Agus, do stop it. And he was joined by De Freitas, who was in for 40 minutes, a useful little partnership there. They put on 35 in 40 minutes, and then he was caught by Dujon Walsh. Lawrence, always entertaining, batting for 35. 35 minutes, hit a four over the wicketkeepers. Angus, for goodness sake, stop it. Hit a four.
Yes, Lawrence played extremely well.
He hit a four over the wicketkeeper's head. And he was out for now.
That's the danger of getting your leg over. And we've had plenty of people in touch with us from a certain part of Carlow, Boris Rahana and Ballymurphy, and they are wondering, would we play the famous commentary that was done the day Mount Leinster Rangers last year won the Leinster hurling title? So this is it here. Brendan Hennessy for KCLR.
Oh God, oh God, where's that ball gone? There's a scrum on the 14-yard line, and Rangers clear their line, and they have it, and Richie Cody has it up. Oh my God, I've never seen anything like that, not even in the RDS with Leinster's cap. It's all over!
It's all over!
The Leinster Rangers are the Leinster champions! I told everybody, to love this one! From Ballymurphy to Bangkok, from Rahana to Rhodesia, and from Forest to all over the world, this has been a day for Carlow hurling. Wexford voted to keep them in Division 2. This is no Division 2. This is Carlow hurling. And these are men heading for the All-Ireland semi-final.
Oh, yes, talk about getting to the pitch of it. That was Brendan Hennessy from KCLR on the occasion of Mount Leinster Rangers winning the Leinster hurling title last year. Now to our sports commentaries and the ones that you have chosen. And we've had a lot of requests in for Effin Eddie's famous commentary. Have we that to hand? This is the great man from, where's the place called? Anyway, Arlow in County Tip. Take it away, Eddie.
There's men being kicked and bruised, my lord. Number 12 is John Kennedy. Wait a minute, no. He is. Where did that go, lads? Wide. And the referee is looking around and acting of Mickey. Kennedy has it. It's a juggler. Yes, it's tapped in. And it comes back to, what the hell is his name? He kicks a low ball and can't be having it, have he? And the game is over. All of history, man. All of County champions out of the D1A football. What a victory. Oh, mother of God, there'll be a big night in the Glen.
A big night in the Glen, indeed. That's the one and only Eddie Moroney. Now, lots of requests in for a racing commentary. Des Cahill and Don Run winning the Gold Cup in 1986. We have it to hand.
Run and skip, Don Run, wayward lad, forgive and forget, still coming there strongly on the near side. Forgive and forget on the near side now as they come to the final fence. Forgive and forget is going to jump marginally in the lead from wayward lad. Forgive and forget on the near side, wayward lad on the far side. It's wayward lad, the veteran, trying to break his Cheltenham hoodoo, being pressed on by Don Run in the centre. Forgive and forget on the near side as they race to the line, and the mares begin to get up, and as they come to the line, she's made it! Dawn Runner's won it! Dawn Runner's won it from Wayward Lad!
And that, of course, was Peter Sullivan, a commentator mentioned by Conor McNamara on Dawn Run winning the Gold Cup back in 1986. And staying with racing, Bob has been in touch to say professionalism personified was when Michael O'Hare went into the jockey's room before the Aintree Grand National and found out the late change of Foinaven's colours, which resulted in him being the only commentator to successfully identify the horse when all around horses, jockeys and commentators fell at that famous fence. And Ger has been in touch with us. She wants to hear Jimmy McGee's famous commentary when John Tracy won silver in LA in 1984 at the 1984 Olympics.
They're going for silver, they're going for bronze. John Tracy is 100 metres to go. In the past, Ireland have won bronze medals. John Caldwell, Freddie Gilroy, Sox Byrne, Jim McCourtney Russell. They've won golds. Pat O'Callaghan twice, Bob Tissel, Ron Delaney. They've won silvers with John McNally, Fred Keane, Wilkinson. And for the 13th time, an Irish medal goes to John Tracy. The crowd stand to the Irishman from Villierstown in Waterford, the little man with a great heart.
Yes.
Connie Waterford has done it.
Yes, indeed. A great moment from 1984 and the LA Olympics and John Tracy winning silver. And a few people from Clare want to hear Marty Morrissey, on the occasion of Clareman scoring a point that equalised, that led to the draw between Cork and Clare in the All-Ireland Hurling Final last September. Have we time? Yeah.
Donald Donovan is the left corner back. He hits it. Wow. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses. What a match.
Oh, and lots and lots of more requests in this morning. And one in particular, that very short and sweet for our commentary back from 1966 and the occasion of England winning the World Cup.
Some people are on the pitch. They think it's all over. It is now.
Ah, yes, and sorry that we didn't get to all the requests in this morning, but we did as much as we could. And will we have 30 seconds of the old Spanish commentator again? Ah, we will. Not to cheer us all up. We haven't got it to hand. Anyway, that's all we have time for this morning. The show was produced by Deirdre Neeline, research was by John Riley, and Cara O'Hare was on sound. And here it is now. A bit of commentary, excitable Spanish commentator on Messi. Sean is up next. We're back on Monday at 9 till then, Sloan.
Deco l'envia cap a la dreta per Xavi, assistència de Xavi, més cap a la dreta per Messi, immens Messi, encara Messi,
increïble, no m'ho puc imaginar, no m'ho podia imaginar, no ho he vist mai això, no ho he vist mai.
The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia Sportage. Peace of mind as standard, quality guaranteed. Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.